Blog Talk Radio.
And a very, very happy Passover to those that are celebrating here in the New York City area and everywhere across the country and around the globe. The Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show back in effect in one of the weirder weeks of sports. But you know what? I think the weirdest part is that I'm in the 25th percentile of our pool, while Seth is in the 75th, and that could easily change with one more week. So here we are today. It's Tuesday, and we're planning on talking a lot about the NCAA tournament. We were supposed to have Chris DeSano on, 8-10 specialist. Unfortunately, it seems like he cannot make it this week, so you're just going to have to be stuck with Seth and Sean for pretty much the next hour. But I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate the Maryland Terrapins on a great run to the NIT. So a possible NIT championship. They're playing Alabama tonight. Good luck to the Terrapins of Maryland. I hope to see you next year in the NCAA tournament, not the not invited tournament.
Well, I guess the positives on that are, number one, if they beat Alabama, they'll be at Madison Square Garden next Thursday, where I will be there. And number two, they should be in the tournament next year while you guys may be on probation and be skipping a tournament. So,
well, if you are at the Madison Square Garden next week, I hope to be joining you in rooting on the Maryland Terrapins in the not-invited tournament.
Actually, but they were
and
invited.
By the way, just for edification, and that's our LSAT word for today, edification.
Yeah. Well done.
Just for your edification. Syracuse has been, quote, close to being on probation for the last 10 years. So until I see a document that says that we are no longer permitted to be in the NCAA tournament, which is the tournament that we're in right now and you're not, you can take that and shove it up your poo-poo.
Are you sure that pooper is not the LSAT word of the day?
No, poo-poo, not pooper.
Oh.
Poo-poo.
Oh. Shove it up my poo-poo? What the hell does that even mean? Who shoves anything up a poo-poo? Good Lord.
Well,
what is wrong with you?
There is plenty that is wrong with me. Come on now. Is this the first show that we're doing together?
No.
Come on. Between my dating life, my work situation, my physical situation, the fact that I'm sitting in a beautiful apartment overlooking New York on a beautiful night and on the phone with you, there's plenty that's wrong with me.
Well, you are more than welcome to get off of the phone, and I will run the show myself as I sit in my parents' house in New Jersey, as most 36-year-old men do. But for those of you who know me, obviously. Oh, I guess he did hang up. Isn't he clever? This is my busy season, so this does happen from time to time. If anyone wants to call in and co-host, since Sean apparently has retired, the number is 760-283-0846. Poor guy. Life is so tough. Job woes, dating woes. Womp, womp. But the one thing that there are no woes for him about are his Syracuse Orange men, who are off to a solid start, although two pretty – well, one brutal game to watch against California in the Sweet 16. Oh, well, look who's back. You decided to grace us with your presence.
Did you miss me?
No. Okay. Did anybody really miss him? I barely got through 30 seconds of talking, which is probably the longest I've spoken in 6 weeks on this show.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Ooh.
A little bit. You know what? A little bitter. A little bitter. I mean, I understand. I really do. That this sports cycle is just not good for you in like the next 3 to 4 months. I mean, you have very little college basketball to like. Your football team is coming. It's NFL post Super Bowl, I don't know, snore season, since your Giants haven't really been making any waves, which is the way that they normally do things anyway. But they've lost a couple of key players, and which we'll get to in a little bit. And you don't like baseball. So basically, what have you got?
I have U.S. World Cup qualifying playing Mexico tonight, which is plus that awesome snowstorm of a game on Friday.
I was going to ask you about that.
Oh, is that
great?
Has that
been canceled?
No. Why should it have been canceled?
Well, I mean, right now Costa Rica is protesting the game.
The protest has already been rejected.
That game was played in a blizzard.
They asked the Costa Ricans if they wanted to stop the game, and the players said no. It was that simple. Both sides agreed to play on. You can't make the adjustment after the game is over. You know, they stopped the game in the 53rd minute and asked the Costa Rican players if they wanted to continue. They said yes. The game continued. They lost. By the way, how much fun did that look like to play in? Oh, that would have been great.
Oh, it reminds me of the Jamaican bobsled team.
Yeah. And so, you know, to me, there's no discussion on that point. Both teams were equally hampered by the snow. No, I mean, is it that advantageous? You know, when you play in Costa Rica, it's 110 degrees and humid. They're not going to play in the, you know, they're not going to play in the 70 degree area. They're going to play in the area most advantageous to, you know, their country. Now, to be fair, I don't think anyone expected snow when this was organized a few months ago. They expected to use the elevation because they have to prepare for playing in Mexico tonight, which is, you know, which also has some elevation, which also deals with the elevation. So Denver was a logical place. The snow was just an interesting happenstance. But it was a lot of fun to watch. I was switching. I had actually gotten home from a benefit where I met Ray Rice and Jamal Westerman and a couple other NFL players. It was great. And if there is a picture actually on my Facebook of Randy Zelia, who is the co-owner of Backsports Page with me, and myself and Ray, who is smaller guy than you anticipate, nice as can be, and seemed really happy to be there.
Well, I'd really like to ask you this question. What was you called me and you said, I wish you were here because. What was the line that you used?
Because I don't recognize any of the players. Because they're all offensive linemen, and I'm not so many of them. I'm not accustomed to seeing without a uniform number. So
I think that's really the difference between football and most of the other sports, in that you are not used to seeing these guys without helmets. So I mean, a big guy is a big guy is a big guy, and I mean, you have your Vince Wilfork's who you see every once in a while. But you probably would not know who Adam Terry was, who's a right tackle from the Ravens, as opposed to Matt Burke, who's the center for the Ravens.
Well, former center, now retired. And
actually,
Vince Wilfork's been in the news also for some really his ex-teammate Ted Johnson making the comment about how ugly his wife is. Why that came about is beyond me. And Vince did not take it very well.
What happened in Texas was Ted Johnson was on a radio show such as this one, and he was asked, who is the ugliest wife of a teammate that you've ever been with or you've ever played with? And he said, well, Vince Wilfork's wife was pretty damn ugly.
Oh.
Ted, that's when you have to step back and say,
they're all beautiful.
I don't feel comfortable
the inside.
Answering. Yeah.
Oh, good Lord. You know, what a terrible, terrible commentary. So let's go back. Let's talk a little bit college. Let's go back to college hoops. So what were your impressions of the first 4 days of the tournament?
Well, aside from the Syracuse and Louisville games, there were very few blowouts. And we've been talking about this all season. Parity is absolutely running amok in the NCAAs this year. And I think that starts from the very beginning and continues to today. I mean, there is a whole lot of parity going on. I mean, the number one team in the nation was Gonzaga going into this tournament. They may not have gotten the number one seed, but they were certainly the AP number one. And I think you would agree with me, they weren't a runaway number one. I mean, any one of a number of teams could have been that number one team. They just happened to have the best record.
Yeah.
There is no dominant team in the NCAAs this year, and if there is, my money's on Louisville.
Well, I agree. You know, and most of the people in our pool, and we appreciate everyone entering our pool, Did take Louisville. I was, I think, one of two exceptions. I did not. I actually think Gonzaga has gotten a really bad rap over the last couple of days. They were, they deserved the number one seed. They beat some very good teams. They lost to a Wichita State team. They hit about 7 3-pointers in a row. That it was, they went on a roll that pretty much no team was going to beat them. I don't think I saw most of that game, and Gonzaga didn't play badly. Wichita State played out of their mind the last 8 minutes of that game.
No, you won't get any. You won't get any dispute from me. I think Gonzaga actually has gotten a bad rap. You know what? Number one seeds have gone down before without in the round of 32. They certainly have. So I mean, it's not unheard of to go down to an 8 or a 9. So the fact is, I think that Gonzaga getting the number one and being the number one team in the nation this year, in a year of parity, the fact that they actually put them as a number one seed is going to deter mid-majors from getting number one seeds in the future. And what's ironic is that it was another number one, another mid-major that took them down in the first place.
Yeah, it was just a bad matchup. And Wichita State, which ironically will probably be favored in their Sweet 16 game, because I'm pretty sure not too many people had a Sweet 16 of Wichita State versus LaSalle. I don't think CBS is really looking forward to the ratings on that game.
You know what, though? LaSalle still gets the Philadelphia crowd, so I don't think that they're too disappointed with that. Is that what they wanted? No. But, I mean, at the end of the day, to use your phrase, at the end of the day, every game in the NCAA tournament, as we have seen the last couple of weeks, is a good game, is a game to watch, is an exciting game. I had Pittsburgh knocking out Gonzaga in the second round, and I wonder how much less detractors you would get if it was Pittsburgh that knocked out Gonzaga instead of Wichita State, being that Pittsburgh is supposedly from the mighty conference of the Big East. Do you think that it is because of who knocked them out rather than that they got knocked out in the first place?
Well, number one, I want to correct you. The games are exciting. The games are not very good. I have stated time and time again, the caliber of college basketball has decreased drastically over the last 5 years. Now, I think these games have been fun, but I think the caliber of basketball is not fantastic.
Yeah,
I think if
but
it wasn't such an
environment. It's the game that's good, not necessarily that the play is good.
Yeah, the games are fun.
I think you're misconstruing what I'm saying. I'm trying to say that I can turn on a game. The game is a good game to watch.
Yeah, the games are fun. And they're fun, a lot of it, because of the inane amount of gambling that goes into it. But the quality of the product is not very good. And that's why I was actually talking about this yesterday. I don't know if the NCAA, and you would know this as an attorney better than I would, if the NCAA could uphold a legal challenge, whether at some point, if collectively they get rid of the one-and-done rule, if it's, you know, whether you either go straight from high school or you have to, or you're committed for 2 or 3 years, I don't know the legal issues, ramifications of that.
Well, that's a collectively bargained issue with the NBA. The way that the NCAA tried to do that in the 70s was overturned by Spencer Hayward's decision. I believe that was in 1974. And that's what brought on the Moses Malones and the Bill Weatherby?
Bill Weatherby, yeah.
Weatherby and Darryl
Willoughby.
Dawkins.
Yeah.
Willoughby, excuse me. And Darryl Dawkins, who all went straight into the pros. So what happened was the NBA collectively bargained that they would have to spend X amount of years or no amount of years, and they did that. And now they have collectively bargained that you need to spend – the NBA will not be able to draft into their team or into the pros. Remember, you can still go to the NBA DL if you're – you don't have to go to college to do that. But in order to be drafted by an NBA team, you have to be 1 year past your graduating class in high school. That's been collectively bargained. So if you want to change that, you would have to wait for the next CBA, which is, or change it currently. The CBA, I believe, expires in 5 more years, so we can await another strike in, or lockout in 5 years.
So, going forward, what are you looking for now? Obviously, there have been some great stories, and the one which I don't really tap myself on the shoulder too often on these things, but the one I was pretty tight on, and it was my feeling on Georgetown. And you know this. I didn't know anything. I'm not going to lie. I knew nothing about Florida Gulf Coast. I sure as heck do now. But I didn't think Georgetown had the guns to make a run. This was proven correct when they got blown out in a 2-15 game. Georgetown is the last 5 years since they dubiously made the Final Four. And I say dubious because take a look back at the Vanderbilt Sweet 16 game. Tell me it wasn't a walk on Jeff Green. But the last 5 years, they've lost to double-digit seed teams in the tournament. Where does this team go?
Well, right now, they're going to the new Big East. If you really want the answer to that question, I mean, that's where they're going. And I'll be very surprised as to how they play, or I'll be very intrigued to see how they play in this new Big East, because they are, for lack of a better term, they should be the dominant player in that conference. Dominant. I mean, if you look at the rest of the teams, you have Villanova. Let's see, they're the Catholic Seven. So you have Villanova, Seton Hall, Georgetown, St. John's, Providence. Tell me where I'm missing.
Well,
tell
you're missing
me where
the team that's gone to the Sweet 16 the last 3 years. In Marquette.
No. But they haven't been dominant. They haven't been dominant in this conference.
No, but they've been to the Sweet 16 the last 3 years. That certainly makes them more dominant than Georgetown's been.
No, I'm sorry. Well, you're saying is Marquette a more dominant team? I think, well, remember, a lot in the NCAA tournament is due to the matchup. You've said this many times before. It's how you get the matchup. So is it possible that Marquette, who almost got beaten by Davidson in the first round and almost lost their second round game as well, either A, got better matchups, maybe not this tournament, but in previous tournaments, or they just got lucky. I mean,
wow.
Georgetown, I think you're right. This year, Georgetown was definitely an overrated team. I think we both talked about that, where they struggled for scoring. And if Otto Porter didn't bail you out, they were going to have problems, and that's exactly what happened. I thought Otto Porter would be able to bail them out. You did not. Obviously, you were correct. You can now write that down. However, in the past, Georgetown has been able to close out teams, maybe not in the tournament, but throughout the regular season. I think it'll be very interesting when you have a different Big East. And I say it's the Big East, but it is. Now with Creighton and Dayton and Creighton and Xavier in there, and I believe Villanova is the other team I was missing, to see what type, whether they are able to jump to the head of the pack and stay there, because now their recruiting base is a lot different. It's still going to be in the Georgetown D.C. area, but here you have less marketability across the entire country. They're going to be on Fox One. They're not going to be on ESPN. So I wonder if their recruits will go down now that they're not the, quote, Big East.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Going through the brackets, obviously besides for Syracuse, and, you know, I think in winning, I don't think they would be your favorite moments to watch. Obviously, you were happy that they won, but they did. They weren't oh my moments, to quote Dick Enberg. You know,
I will tell you that against Montana, it was definitely an oh my moment, because I will tell you right now, I have never seen Syracuse blow out an opponent ever. I mean, I've been a Syracuse fan for 25 years, since I was probably 11. I can't remember the last time they blew out an opponent by 30. It was probably against Rutgers when I was a freshman in college, or against Lemoyne, which really doesn't count. So here you are, you win by 47 points in a dominant fashion. And the biggest part about that, which I hope that they would extend to the Cal game, was using a little bit more of their bench. But they decided not to do that, and Jim Boeheim once again shortened his bench. I think you're right. I think this game may be passing Jimmy Boeheim by. I mean, short bench, not playing well, not being able to shoot free throws. I mean, you've been saying this for a while, that Jim Boeheim is a good coach, but he's not a great coach. I'm coming around on your side, my friend.
Well, what I give Jimmy credit for, and Mike Hopkins, the assistant as well, is for the life of me, I just can't imagine if I could go anywhere in the country, why the heck I would want to be in Syracuse, New York. And that's nothing against
that's
kind of,
you
know,
yeah,
that's
you're
nothing
right.
against
but
the Syracuse, you know, people.
That brings up our next point, which we'll talk to in a little bit, in that both USC and UCLA now do not have coaches. But we'll get to that at the end of the brackets, because I think that that is a big story in the NCAA offseason. Who's going to coach in L.A.? But we'll get to that in a little bit. I mean, as far as the rest of the brackets are concerned, I loved what Syracuse did in the first game. Second game, I was kind of, oh boy, here we go again, because that's just the way that they play. Now they get to go against Indiana. And Indiana is built very much like Louisville is built, in that they have a guy that can pass the ball out of the high post, being Cody Zeller. This is a bad matchup for Syracuse. It's a really bad. I thought Temple was a good matchup for Syracuse, even though they lost to them earlier in the year. But Indiana's probably the worst matchup you could ask for.
I agree. They're too well-rounded. They shoot the ball too well from the outside. And when you have a high post threat like a Cody Zeller, who knows the game well enough and can do what he does, what he can do so many different things with the ball, it does lead to a lot of problems. And this is a Syracuse team that outside of Sutherland does not shoot very well. And, you had Wyatt from Temple almost single-handedly win that game for them. And you're going to need that kind of scoring, and I just don't see it coming against Indiana.
I would totally agree with you. I don't see Syracuse getting past this game unless Brandon Trish comes up with a 20-point game and Sutherland continues to hit down threes. But I think the biggest question for Syracuse, and it's been that way all year long, is defense down in the post, because Cody Zeller is going to go for 20. But you got to stop, and I can never remember this guy's name.
Oladipo.
Yeah, the guy that hit that monster shot that actually propelled them into the Sweet 16. So, I mean,
you're talking
I
about Christian
that,
Watford?
We're
talking
no,
about
no,
Oladipo?
No.
Or?
Oladipo. This is the worst matchup that Syracuse can have. I just don't see him passing. So,
no.
let's go to Miami, who goes to Washington, D.C. as well. And they're playing some good ball. I mean, they got lucky in beating Illinois.
Lucky beating Illinois.
Yeah.
Illinois played them shockingly well. And John Gross is really building something out in Champaign. And they're playing a Marquette team that just strikes me as the team you just never want to play in the tournament. They're the big-time conference version of Butler. You know, they play... They don't have that much talent. They play very good defense. And that's why the Marquette-Butler game, except for the last minute, was so enjoyable to watch. Well played, good coaching, good, well-coached teams. The last minute was a crap show.
Is it possible that Buzz Williams may be the best coach in the NCAA tournament? I mean, he gets the most?
Don't think so,
He gets the most? Out of the least every year.
Yeah. But what's so interesting is, you know, in the prior years, the least, they had Jai Crowder. They had some talent. They've got nothing this year.
Right.
And,
well, that's what I'm saying.
You know, didn't they? They were number two or number three in the Big East. And they beat a tough Butler team and, you know, a tough Davidson team. And I think Miami beats them. I think Miami is too talented for them. But I don't love the matchup. at all.
Well, I don't. This is the matchup that I think that Miami did not want to see, because while it's predictive, because the chalk ran in the East with the 1, 2, 3, and 4 teams all making it. Marquette is one of those tough teams down on the block, which is what Miami plays. They don't play an outside game. They play more of an inside game. And I really think that this is probably the one matchup that they did not want to see. They did not want to see the overachieving Marquette game. So I like Miami, but like you, I think that this will be a very tough matchup. Unlike Syracuse and Indiana, which I don't think will be a close game, I do think this will be a very close game. I wouldn't be surprised if Marquette pulled it out.
This strikes me, and I always joke about these teams that lose 63-59 in the Sweet 16, 70-68 in the second round. You know, I was talking about it this year with Iowa State. And we'll get to that in that bracket, which is a disaster and a half for everybody.
Not for me.
Well, you picked one team to go far. I picked,
And guess what? That team still in the bracket.
Yes, and they probably shouldn't be. But, that team that loses 63, 61, 62, 60, that's that Marquette team. And, they're a dangerous, dangerous team. I would not want to play them. Who do you like in the Miami-Indiana game? I do like Miami. I simply think they're playing better.
Well, we've had that discussion, you and I. I think Indiana makes the final game, so I'm going to stick with that. I do think Miami is playing some great ball. I mean, really, they really are. But I think that Cody Zeller has played some amazing basketball in this tournament, and I really think that he's the X factor. I mean, the fact that – and it's not his scoring so much as his passing out of the post. I don't think there's a better big man passing out of the post than Cody Zeller right now in the NCAA.
Going on to the West, which is an absolute and utter disaster, except for most of us. Because unlike Sean, I didn't pick Wichita State versus LaSalle.
Nor did I. No. The top of my bracket in that – the top of that region is a disaster for me as well. But
did you take Ohio State, Arizona?
I have – no, I did not take Arizona, but I have Ohio State in the Final Four.
Right, I know that. Yeah, and
so,
both teams I had in this Final Eight are out. Gonzaga and New Mexico, who put up an abomination of a performance against Harvard. Gonzaga, I don't hold too much against. Wichita State just played great. That New Mexico Harvard game was awful. It was just an awful performance by New Mexico.
You know what's interesting though? Steve Alford signed a major extension the day before that game, and New Mexico has played some good ball over the last couple of years, but they've underachieved. And, when you look at some of the other conferences and some of the other teams, like Tubby Smith getting fired in Minnesota, Ben Howland getting fired in Westwood for UCLA, I know New Mexico struggles for coaches, so that may be why they re-signed Steve Alford, or re-upped him for like 10 more years. But at the end of the day, Steve Alford's underachieved at New Mexico.
Well, I don't know. It's not like New Mexico has had such a great, sterling reputation over the last 10, 15 years. They were big in the 70s with, I think, Reggie Theus and Lou Henson.
They had Kenny Thomas in the late 90s.
Right, and I think they have Danny Granger as well.
Yes, and they made a Sweet 16 with Kenny Thomas. So, Danny Granger went to Iowa?
I'm going to have to look this up. Damn it. Then they lost to New Mexico in the tournament. It was one of the two. I don't remember which.
I got it right here. Continue on talking. I got it right here.
I disagree because I think they knew the USC job was obviously open. There was a good chance that the UCLA job was going to be open, and they didn't want Alford. And Alford would have been a candidate, and whether he deserved it or not, he would have been named. He would have been in the running for that. And I think this was their tying him up, just like they Pittsburgh just tied up Jamie Dixon for 10 years because there was a very good thought process that he may end up in USC.
You're right. Danny Granger did go to New Mexico, so that is correct.
Wow. Two in a row for me.
And I do agree with your thought. If you think that Alford was a candidate at either UCLA or USC, then they did make the right call. You're absolutely spot on. Okay, so moving forward in that bracket, who do you like for LaSalle and Wichita State, and do either one of them have a shot against Arizona or Ohio State?
Yes. And yes.
To both.
First of all, the team that's been the most impressive to me in this is LaSalle. Winning three games in 3 days, in 5 days, excuse me. Dominating Kansas State, although in the first half of all that, then how they had the energy to play it to beat Ole Miss was beyond me. I do think Wichita State wins. I actually, at this point, think Wichita State goes to the Final Four. Because I am not sold on Ohio State at all. And they got extremely lucky to beat Iowa State. A team actually that in my other pool I had Iowa State beating Ohio State. I don't know what to make out of Arizona, to be honest. They've looked good. But, you know, they looked good against Belmont and Harvard. You know, Harvard pretty much, you know, proverbially blew their load in the first game against New Mexico and had nothing left. So I don't really know what Arizona brings, to be honest. I'm sure I have a couple people who will maybe calling me to let me know in no uncertain terms. But I think Ohio State beats Arizona. I think Ohio State-Wichita State is a really strange matchup. But
well, just for those that would like to call in, 760-283-0846. You're always welcome to call in the Seth and Sean Sports Radio or Twitter, Seth and Sean, or find us on our Facebook page. We're always available for comments and calls. I somewhat agree with you. I think a big part of that Ohio State game is the fact that I agree they got lucky. You will not convince me otherwise. Do I think that it was an offensive foul? I think it could have gone either way.
But it's not even that.
I'm impressed by referees. I mean, I'm not sure if that's a reviewable play or it should be a reviewable play, but the fact that you have to understand that there is some human element into this.
I'm not talking strictly about the charge. You know, those calls happened. I'm talking about this team still doesn't have a consistent second scorer behind DeSean Thomas.
DeSean Thomas did get injured late in that second half, and I think I think he twisted his ankle. That took a lot. I'm not sure if you got to watch the end of that game or if you were just watching on replay, but the loss of DeSean Thomas, at least at 100%, took away a lot of their offense. I mean, they run a lot of their offense through him. I mean, he's comparatively their Dirk Nowitzki. So, I mean, he's the guy that goes on the pick and roll. He's the guy that posts up. He is their guy. So when you lose that for a while, and I would say the same thing with Iowa State. Iowa State, when they lost Babbitt in the first half, I'm sorry?
No, continue, please.
Yeah, when they lost him in the first half, they struggled at first to try and figure out how to score. So they didn't have their leading guy. Well, when Thomas went down, and down is a liberal way, when he got hurt and he wasn't able to move the same way, that happened with 2 minutes left in the game. That's struggling. I mean, you got to figure out how to score without your best player with 2 minutes left in the game. Aaron Kraft came up big. I mean, he obviously saved my bracket. So, I mean,
he came up big after, but he had committed a couple turnovers at the end as well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, no, look, credit to him that, you know, he held the ball and with 3 seconds, you know, most people make a move with 7 seconds left. He made it with 3 and, you know, hit the shot and they're on to the Sweet 16 and they're the favorite to go from the West. I'm just not sold on them.
Ladies and gentlemen, the new Jimmy Chitwood.
So going.
I obviously have Ohio State coming out of that bracket. You are now going with Wichita State.
Yeah, which kind of weirds me out a little bit, I'm not going to lie. But I don't know. I really have no feel for this bracket at all. And
all
right, we had said early on we thought it was extremely weak. You know, Gonzaga was the weakest one. Kansas State was the weakest four. New Mexico was the weakest three. You know, it's lived up to that and more.
So going from the weakest links to the strongest 12 seed ever in NCAA history, Oregon, in the Midwest, going – and you said this. I mean, you and Andy Katz and a whole lot of other people said, what the heck is Oregon doing as a 12 seed? Well, they were a 12 seed, and look at them now. They're up against the number one seeded and probably the number one overall seed in Louisville. And while Oregon has been extraordinarily good – I don't give them a shot against Louisville.
I give them a shot, but not much of one. I thought, I did have Oklahoma State because I really liked Oklahoma State. And I do owe an apology. I made some comments.
It's okay.
Well, thank you. We don't even know what the comments are yet.
Oh, you're not apologizing to me. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. The last thing in the world I owe you is apologies.
Wow.
Is... You know, my thought was, so we had talked, I guess it was more on my Facebook, that I was shocked that the Pac-10 got five or six teams and the Atlantic 10 got five or six teams in the Atlantic, the ACC, which is where I'm admittedly a little bit of a homer, only got four. But both, you know, I was not as impressed with Pac-10 basketball, having seen most of it, having watched, you know, not an enormous amount this year, but... Look, I mean, these teams, you know, UCLA won a game. Actually, no, they got annihilated, my fault. But Oregon has been extremely impressive. Arizona has done their job. So you have two teams in the Sweet 16, and the Atlantic 10 did very nicely in the first, you know, I think five of the six teams won at least a game. And,
right.
You know,
so where's your apology for the Big East here?
What apology exactly did you expect for the Big East?
Well, ye, being Mr. Kamens, said that you did not believe that there was quality basketball in the Big East this year, and
we got
three out of 16 here.
I thought it was how many teams were in the tournament from the Big East? Eight?
Eight? Yeah, so we got three out of eight.
Yeah, great. That's a sensational percentage.
30% make the 16.
That's
only 25% make it at all.
I understand that, but... The Big East is always going to have the biggest the biggest conference, and they're going to have the most teams come in. If you have four or five teams make it, I'd be impressed.
Three?
Par for the course. I'm not overwhelmed. I'm more impressed with the Big 12, which I've thought has been the biggest best conference all year, and I've said that. And they have, I think, three teams as well, maybe four. I'd have to go back and look. So
moving on, in the Midwest, we have the other bracket, which is probably the best two coaches in America. Tom Izzo and Mike Krzyzewski meet again.
You mean it's not Dana Altman and Rick Pitino?
Well, I love Rick, and I really do. And I think that Buzz Williams is probably right now the best game-by-game coach in America. And I really do think that he is that good. These are probably historically the two best coaches left in the tournament.
No argument.
And I know you love Izzo. You absolutely love Izzo. In fact, I think you go gaga over Tom Izzo every time you talk about him.
Do
you think that Tom Izzo makes the adjustments and beats the Blue Devils?
I don't think they need to make the adjustments. Simply put, I think Michigan State's a tougher team than Duke. I think Duke is the same team every single year. They have great scorers. They have great shooters. And they don't rebound very well and have trouble with athleticism. Now, the interesting part is Michigan State's not overwhelmingly athletic, especially we don't know how healthy Keith Appley, their point guard, is going to be. But they do have Gary Harris. And they're just too big. I think they're just too big for Duke. And I think they win this game. I think they win this game by about 10 to 12 points. You know, the problem I have with Duke, and yes, I mean, and for those of you who know me, who don't know me, yes, I went to an ACC school, so obviously I'm not the world's biggest advocate of Duke, but I was brought up a Duke fan, so I'm not this big anti-Krzyzewski, anti-Blue Devil team. But to me, they have the same team every year. They have great shooters. They have a big guy, whether it's Brian Zubek or Kubek, whatever his name was, or Carlos Boozer back in the day. Or it's this, you know, or this. It seems like the same thing every year. They have one big guy, and they have three or four swingmen who can shoot. Ryan Kelly got shut.
Wait, but how many times has this team won national championships?
Four.
So it obviously works.
Yeah, but the last 10 years they've won one championship. They've made, I think, two Final Fours, maybe three. I don't know. Three, I think, actually. That's not
fair. Which most programs would take in a heartbeat.
Oh, every
including
program.
Including your Maryland Terrapins. But wait, they're in
really?
The Final Four of a different tournament.
But they're not. They're in the Final Eight, Jackass.
Oh, sorry.
But,
Final Eight of a different tournament.
Yeah.
Sorry,
no,
you haven't even made the Final Four yet.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is they are the same team every year.
Okay.
And over the last 10 years, they have struggled a bit more in these Sweet 16 games against more athletic, more physical teams, which I think Michigan State is.
Okay, so you're picking Michigan State in this game without
yes.
a problem.
Yes.
Okay, do you pick them by more than five?
You
think double digits?
I think around 10 points.
Okay.
I think it's close for the first half. I think they beat them up in the last 5 to 6 minutes.
All right, I'll take the – I think that's as well, so Michigan State over Duke. So we have Michigan State versus Louisville in a final in the Midwest. I still think Louisville is the best team in the country. I still think they clamp down on D better than any team in the country. And it's defense that wins championships, as every single sport will tell you, except for probably baseball. There it's pitching. But I think Louisville takes this. I think it's hard. I think that it will be probably one of the best games in the tournament, but I think Louisville takes this game. I think Pitino makes his Final Four.
I agree. I think I'm looking at something like an 81-76 kind of game.
Wow, that's
tight.
A lot more scoring than I envisioned. I'm thinking 71-69. I mean, I think it's going to be really low scoring.
Well, 71-69. By the way, for the gamblers, if you ever want to win money in a tournament, bet the unders. Just look at the scores.
Absolutely.
It is the easiest
except
way.
When you're facing Syracuse and Montana, then you can bet the over.
But when you have two kind of no-name teams, you know, that's, I think, a better way. I mean, you know, St. Louis 64, New Mexico State 44. Teams that are not accustomed to playing under big lights, they don't shoot very well.
Yeah. And we don't endorse gambling here at the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. However, we do give tips. So, moving on to the final bracket, in the game that will make or break my bracket, pretty much, Michigan against Kansas.
Michigan's been the best team in the tournament so far.
Agreed.
They've been fantastic. Now, they beat a South Dakota State team with actually some talent led by Nate Wallers, who is compared as a poor man's Steve Nash. They blew out the vaunted Havoc defense of VCU. And they're playing against a Kansas team that has not looked great. And to be honest, if I could change my pick right now, I would probably go with Michigan. But having taken Kansas to go to the Final Eight, I'll stick with it. But that's not exactly a rousing endorsement.
Overwhelming endorsement. I think you took the words right out of my mouth in that they have been the dominant team in this tournament, bar none. I think Kansas has played awful. I think Kansas has gotten by solely on talent. They basically got by North Carolina because they were bigger than them. That was it. I mean, North Carolina played five guys all under the height of 6'9" for almost the entire game. Their tallest guy was James Michael McAdoo, who's 6'9". So, I mean, and Kansas has two guys that I believe are 7 feet, and they basically played inside, and you were able to do that. Against Michigan, you're not going to be able to do that. and just dominate the inside. So I'm going to stick with my pick and take Michigan in the first game. And in the battle of the Floridas, Florida Gulf Coast University, led by her husband.
Led by the coolest dorky guy in America.
Yeah, I think we've gone through this, and everybody's heard about the glorious campus and the strikingly gorgeous supermodel mom. But I don't think they have a shot against Florida. But then again, I said that against Georgetown, too, and they just keep surprising me. So will I be rooting for them? Absolutely, because I got Michigan in the other side. But I think that they finally go down to their in-state rivals, if that's a rivalry.
I don't really know what to make out of them. All I know is they've been the most enjoyable team to watch in recent memory in college basketball, but they just look like they're having a hell of a lot of fun. I don't count them out of this game at all. Although I do have Florida in the Final Four, I really don't count them out. They beat Miami. They dominated Georgetown. And they blew up a good San Diego State team, which I had in Sweet 16. And the funny thing is, there's nothing about this team that feels flukish.
No.
And they're playing a Florida team that has not won a game by single digits this year, which I did not know.
Yep.
Which makes me wonder if this game is close with 7 or 8 minutes to go. You know, Florida has looked good, but we all knew Minnesota was a no-brainer pick. You know, I like Florida, but I'm not sold this was an easy game.
I would love to see this happen. I think that actually, of the two teams, I think Florida Gulf Coast University is a more athletic team than Florida, from what I've seen. What's that?
I said they are.
Yeah, so, I mean, they remind me of a Loyola Marymount team in the 80s. In the 90s, where they're just running with a little bit of defense, which is better than what Loyola did. But they are a upper-class type team. They are straight out of what George Mason did a couple of years ago. I mean, are they to the same caliber? I don't know. But it is a great story. I would love for it to continue and have them play Michigan. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I'll tell you something, though. If they get past this game, I would not count them out against anybody. At least against the Kansas-Michigan winner. This team seems so confident that it will be really, really interesting. So, you know, you have Michigan. So your Final Four is still set. I have three of the four of mine still set. I'm going to go, you know, somewhat reluctantly and confusingly with Wichita State, because I just don't know who else to pick. On to the other college basketball news. Two big coaches out. Ben Howland at UCLA.
Three.
Who's the third
two.
Big one?
Yeah,
out?
You're probably right. Okay. I'm thinking of somebody else, but okay, you're right. Two. Ben Howland and Tubby Smith?
Yes.
Okay.
Tubby Smith, after 7 or 8 years at Minnesota, you know, they never really built up. They went to the tournament a couple times, but just didn't achieve what was expected. And Howland, after 3 years in the Final Four and two national championship games, that team just fell apart. Also you have guys like Bill Walton who are constantly talking about his dismissal. You know, the issue is UCLA is not UCLA of 1974. The game has passed that by, and, you know, the people think about him in the good old days. Is it a top school at this point? I don't know. I don't think so. It's not a North Carolina, a Duke, a Kansas, an Indiana. It's not.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm trying to look for the article on Ben Howland in CNNSI, which was fantastic. I can't find it right now. I'm looking for it. If I find it by the end of the show, I'll definitely let everybody know. And if I can't, then I will post it on the I'll post a link on the Facebook site. But it was fantastic, and it led you to believe that there was a it wasn't just Ben Howland not being able to coach, but it was the fact that he has disassociated himself with the recruiting base in L.A. And if that's – here it is. It's George Doberman. It's called The Moment Things Started to Unravel for Ben Howland. And it's on SI.com, and we here at the show like to promote other writers. We're definitely not against that, and I think that is an excellent article, which I think everybody, if you're interested in the unraveling of Ben Howland, you should definitely read it. As far as Tubby Smith, I got a problem with that, and I know that he never went further than I think it was one Sweet 16, if he got that far. But who does Minnesota think that they're going to get? That's my biggest problem. I mean, their AD came from Virginia Commonwealth, and their assistant AD as well. Do they think they're getting Shaka Smart?
Well, the rumor is Shaka is going to re-sign again at VCU. And Shaka is actually from Wisconsin, so there is that Midwest flavor to it. But I don't think so. I mean, I think if Shaka Smart's going to go anywhere, I think he goes to UCLA. If I was him, that's where I would go.
Well, and the I think thing is, he turned down Illinois last year, mm-hmm. which went to John Croce. And UCLA, while it is a crown jewel job, as they like to say, there are probably five or six in the NCAA, and that's one of them. Shaka Smart has the most job security probably of any coach in the country right now at VCU. And he earns, I believe, $1.4 million in Virginia, in Richmond, Virginia. I mean, that's not Washington, D.C. for those people that don't know where Richmond is. It's a little bit more south and a little bit less expensive. $1.4 million buys you a lot of groceries in Richmond, Virginia, as my friend Scott Malky would tell you. And the fact is, if he's not leaving for Illinois, is he leaving for UCLA? Is he going across the country? He's from Chicago. Is he from Chicago or Wisconsin? He's from one of those two. And the fact is, who do you think is going to those jobs? I mean, UCLA is not an easy job right now.
So, yeah, no, I agree. But no, it's a tough call. It's a tough call. And, you know, one of the big arguments is, well, if he doesn't go, where is he going? Is he going to, you know, if he's not going, if he's going to stay, who is UCLA looking at? Who is USC looking at? Who is Minnesota looking at? I don't know. I mean, the obvious pick for me, and you're going to laugh, is the rumors are that USC is going to go after Mike Hopkins.
That's not I'm not going to laugh. I think that's an excellent pick for them. Mike Hopkins is from California. He would be a very good recruiter in that area. He knows the talent base. He's recruited there for over 20 years. I think that would be an excellent pickup for them. And I've said it before, I don't think if Mike Hopkins becomes the Syracuse coach and he doesn't win 20 games right away, he's the new Bill Guthridge. Replacing a legend is not an easy task. You don't want to be the guy that replaces the legend. You want to be the guy that replaces the guy who replaces the legend.
Right.
And that's going to be Jerry McNamara for Syracuse. So I'm not sure if I'm Mike Hopkins that I turn that down. I take the UCLA job over the USC job, though.
Of course. I don't think he's going to get offered the UCLA job. You know, the games, it's going to be interesting. There aren't that many big names out there right now. Josh Pastner looks like he's going to re-sign at Memphis. And to be honest, I don't think he's ready for a UCLA job. I think you need more success before you get to that point. I mean, what are you really looking at? Shaka Smart's not going to...
But here's the thing. You're talking about Josh Pastner, and I assume Brad Stevens is in this conversation somewhere as well, in that you need more winning to get to that point. What do you need? I mean, Josh Pastner has made Sweet 16.
No, he hasn't.
What do you need?
No, he hasn't.
I thought he made a Sweet 16.
Josh Pastner won his first NCAA tournament game this year.
You're right. I'm sorry. Calipari made it with that team. My bad.
So, I don't see. see, Stephen to me is a
good... What about the Florida Gulf Coast guy?
I'd be shocked if you see someone jump from Florida Gulf Coast to UCLA. Shocked.
Well, then you are right. I don't see where these coaches are coming from.
No. I think, you know, Stevens to me is a Midwest guy from a Midwest town, played in a Midwest school. That's what I see. And, you know, I don't know. My guess would have been they would have made, you know, does USC make a run at Jay Wright? Does UCLA make a run at Jay Wright? Is that available? I don't know. It's going to be a really, really interesting couple weeks.
Well, just a little tidbit before we end. I think you brought up a very interesting candidate in being Jay Wright, because remember, the Big East is not the Big East anymore.
Right.
And they're moving to this new Big East where Villanova is not a top player in that conference. They're probably in the second tier of that conference power-wise. Does Jay Wright leave Philadelphia and go to L.A.? I think you might even be looking at NBA coaches, where you look at maybe a Dick or a Stan Van Gundy and looking to move that.
Or a Mike Brown, who knows the L.A. business, knows the L.A. world.
One second. There's one more guy that you may hear, and Kelvin Sampson's out there. Kelvin Sampson's proven he can do this in college. He's now an assistant coach at the Rockets.
Yeah, but he may still be banned.
No, he's Remember. Not. He's off the no ban list.
Yeah, but I'm not quite sure you really want to bring someone in off of the no ban list.
Agreed. All right. So, Mr. Kamens, finish up.
Okay. A couple months ago, I'm actually going to give a shout out to one of my fraternity brothers. This was posted today. I attended a bone marrow donation reception, raise, you know, not party, excuse me, a bone, you know, a formal, whatever you want to call it, and it raised over $250,000, led by the wonderful Jessica Abo. And, you know, this is something that both I have friends and family where this has been, you know, bone marrow donation has been really, you know, it's had a relatively big impact. And apparently a fraternity brother of mine, Joe Robinson, down in Washington, down in D.C., made an anonymous donor, met the woman whose life he saved. He got swabbed a year ago, gave bone marrow to a woman in Peabody, I think Massachusetts, and she survived because of it. And they met for the first time last week, and I think that's fantastic. And I just want to say, everyone who has the opportunity to do that, to be swabbed and have the chance to save someone's life by donating bone marrow, do it. Way to go, Joe.
Absolutely. That is tops. We would definitely love to thank him. And as you said, anybody that can take a course in CPR or first aid or can be swabbed for any one of any type of disease that you may be able to help, please do such. We definitely support that here. Well, it's becoming a little bit warmer outside, and baseball is starting, much to the dismay of Mr. Kamens, because starting in 2 weeks, that's what we'll be occupying our time with, and Fred Steinman may or may not be coming on as a special guest host while Mr. Kamens takes a little bit of time off. But we are going to have our baseball preview in a couple of weeks. Big things are happening here on the Seth and Strawn Sports Radio. We have our NFL draft preview that's coming up at the end of April. We should have Chris DeSano on hopefully next week to discuss the Final Four. I may be broadcasting live from the Final Four in a week or two when Syracuse makes it. Okay, now you can laugh. But who knows? We'll see. And once again, we'd just like to thank all of our listeners, and we will have a guest host in a couple of weeks for the person that wins the pool, unless that's me. So,
not likely.
Go Michigan, go Ohio State, make me a winner, boys. For Seth Kamens, this is Sean Palmer. We have a great time as always. Thanks a lot for joining, and we'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye, everybody.